Wisconsin, it's finally here. Yuengling, oldest brewery in America, family-owned and operated for six generations, and now officially in Wisconsin. Whether I'm tailgating, watching the game at a sports bar, just kicking back, I'm reaching for a Yuengling. DG Yuengling & Son, Pottsville, PA. Enjoy responsibly.
What if I told you, 10 years ago, one show began.
Our very first guest, Aaron Rodgers.
And despite what some expected.
What number would you set for how many shows we do together?
I'm going to say you do about 230. Then Tausch kind of bows out.
It had become iconic.
Yeah, this is for Mark Tausch, or Tausch, as they say. This negativity's got to stop.
And what if I told you?
You were rated as a sixth-round pick. Last time I checked, you went in the seventh round, so I kind of overrated you with the sixth-round grade. You are trying to destroy my career of 46 years, and I don't appreciate it.
10 key contributors.
Joining us now,
it's like anything. It's time for Mike McCarthy.
Shape the legacy of the show.
I have to, you know, apologize for my negative attitude towards you for all those years. I actually enjoyed my 1 year in the media.
Wilde and Tausch's 10th anniversary is presented by Steinhoffels. And this is the 10 for 10 series, built by Outdoor Living Unlimited, Wisconsin's best deck builders.
Did we die?
Certainly felt that way.
What do you mean, did you die?
It was very,
We've played this before. I know. You didn't think you died the first time we played it.
I think I thought the same thing the last time. Let's liven things up as joining us now on the Yuengling guest hotline, and really he's the GOAT. It's the GOAT hotline with him. And wait till we replay one of the clips from him when he joined us nearly 3 years ago. It is MLB Insider for ESPN, Jeff Passan. Not to be confused with our passing. Based on that promotion. Jeff, good morning. How are you?
I didn't realize that I was going to be witnessing miracles this morning. And here I am talking to two dead guys. It's great.
Well, we're very much alive and we're very appreciative.
Was this all Jesse's fault?
Yes.
Like, I thought there was going to be like some kind of special introduction or like last time Jeff Passan was on Wilde and Tausch and they played the clip. But no, it was just a random death montage that had nothing to do with me.
Well,
the clips were all fun. It's no one like I'm gonna miss you guys. No one said that.
Remember the time that these two dead guys had Mike McCarthy on the show. Well, first of all, we appreciate you, and we would have put together a separate montage, but this is part of our 10th anniversary special. We're bringing in the highest profile of guests, and yes, you qualify, and in part because I don't think in real time, and you know that I've thought the world of you for a long time. We have Charles Robinson as a mutual friend. He's always, even long before you're at ESPN, he talked about what a great guy you are and how good you are at your job. But I don't know if I appreciated in real time how good you were at your job until Jesse played this clip when we were playing one of our games to celebrate our 10th anniversary. And the game is, when did he say this? And this, that when we revealed when you said this, it was mind-blowing.
As good as the talent on this team is now, as great as I anticipate Jackson Churio is going to be, and as much as Jacob Mizorowski can be like the best pitcher in the big leagues if everything comes together, and that's not an exaggeration, like he's got that kind of stuff, as much as all of those things may be true, the Brewers are still on that same walkway that they've been on.
And that was said in November of 2023.
Dang.
Before most of us knew who the Miz even was.
Neither of those guys had made their major league debut yet.
Dude, are you a savant or what's the deal?
You know, I think it comes down to this. I don't know a whole lot. So I ask people who do, and when they tell me and they have a history of being right about things, I tend to trust them. And that's what happened in this situation. Now, mind you, I knew a lot more about Jacob Mizorowski than most because he trains at the same place my son did at the time.
So I knew all his coaches, and I knew what he was working on, and I had seen it, and I had heard things. And I don't know that I was going all that far out on a limb. I think if you would have talked to any scout at the time, they would have said, yeah, that's true, but it's an enormous if, right? If everything comes together for Jacob Mizrahi, it's not very often we see things come together in just the neat fashion that they have with Mizrahi, where when you have worlds of potential, those worlds are not just found, but explored. And that's what he's doing right now, guys. I think where Jacob Mizrahi is compared to every other pitcher in Major League Baseball, and I include Tarek Skubal there, and I include Paul Skeens there, and I include the guys who are widely regarded as the best in the big league, Cy Young winners, people who have just found success year after year. None of them is on Mizrahi's level right now. When he is pitching the way that he is, I have never seen anything like it. And I really do wonder if the effect that Mizrahi's success has is going to continue to breed this generation of pitchers who throws so extraordinarily hard, but none of them have those other tools that allow Mizrahi to do what he's doing. And I don't know, frankly, that that's a positive, because I think a bootleg version of Jacob Mizrahi is horrendous to watch. But the reason he's so good is not because he throws 105.5 miles per hour. It's because he knows where the ball's going and he can put it where he wants to. And to be able to organize 6'7" worth of arms and legs in space the way that he can, and have actual command of this stuff that's better than everyone else's, it's the reason that Milwaukee is as lucky as it is right now, because you guys get to witness this every fifth day, and what a joy that must be.
Jeff, how has he done it? Because we saw that talent, and you predicted that talent 3 years ago. But how has he made that big jump? Is it, you know, this whole pitching, the thing that nobody will talk about, what the Brewers do with their pitching? Or how has he gotten to this point so quickly?
I think it's a combination. I think you look at Jacob Mizrahi at 6'7" and 190 pounds, and, you know, it doesn't scream athlete. But I think you have to be incredibly athletic to, and the word for what I was talking about earlier, organizing your body in space, understanding where it is called proprioception. And Jacob Mizrahi's proprioception is absolutely off the charts. And I think one thing the Brewers did really well with him is they never discouraged him from throwing hard, but they didn't make it the priority either. They understood that there was a lot of velocity there already, and even if Mizrahi had to ramp back on it a little bit to get the touch, to get the feel, to get the understanding of what he needed to be doing to throw strikes, because throwing strikes was the only path that was going to take him to the big leagues, he prioritized that. And all the other stuff, he figured, that'll all work itself out. And guess what? It did. And once he, you know, once the mechanics were as locked in as they are right now, that's when he could focus back on the other things, like throwing the ball extremely hard. And the Brewers player development is second to none. I say that with the Dodgers in baseball, and with the Rays, and with the Guardians, and with all these teams that have the reputation as being good player development organizations. There have been enough instances, whether it's Mizrahi or whether it's Kyle Harrison or whether it's Jake Bowers or Andrew Vaughn. I can go on and on and on about guys who have gone to the Brewers and found the best version of themselves. This team is just really, really good at understanding players and understanding what they can be and figuring out how to get that out of them.
All right, Jeff, we want to talk about other aspects of the Brewers and the bigger picture. I do want to ask one last thing. Jesse yesterday put Mizrahi on a Cooperstown trajectory. He's on a Hall of Fame trajectory. We kind of got after him a little bit. But how do you make sure,
with the pitfalls of injury and with the other chip? How do you do that?
You prepare for the inevitability of an injury. I know that is such like a dark thing to say, mm-hmm. but it's the reality. Like, you just, the philosophies of the Brewers organization don't change because they understand the likelihood, unless he is the outlier of outliers, is that at some point Jacob Mizrowski is going to get hurt. At some point, that body of his that is as incredible as it is at generating velocity is going to reach a breaking point, and an ulnar collateral ligament in the elbow can take only so much. And the only antidote that you can't replace the most talented pitcher in the world. Like, that's an impossible thing to do. So what you need is reams of depth. And considering what the Brewers have had happen this season in terms of injuries, and considering where they are right now, I'd say they've done a pretty good job of having enough depth arms to not make up for that type of injury if it were to happen, but at least to keep yourself afloat when that gut punch arrives.
So, Jeff, does that, when you say that, and the, you know, we don't want to predict that that's going to happen. We all hope that he stays healthy. But with him being the best pitcher in the world, does that put any added pressure on the Brewers organizationally to, and with the looming lockout or strike or whatever is might be happening next year, does that add another layer of maybe this is the time to utilize some of these great prospects that we have to go get a Skubal or someone else, maybe a back-end rotation guy or a hitter?
I think those are two different conversations. Skubal, it would be such a drastic deviation from standard operating procedure of the Milwaukee Brewers. I think they would really need to talk themselves into that. But generally speaking, being more aggressive, yes, yes, and yes. You open a window so you can climb through it. You don't open a window so you can sit on the ledge and wonder what's going to happen if you jump. And there, whatever trades the Brewers make at this deadline, guys, there's a chance that they're going to come back on them and they're going to deeply regret it. If they make multiple trades this year, I would argue that it's likely that they wind up regretting at least one of them. Even the Dodgers, who are as good at personnel maneuvering as any team in baseball, traded Yordan Alvarez, who is the best hitter in baseball mm-hmm. right now. So they're not immune to it. But I think that the argument that you just made right there is too sound to ignore. You're in a league where, Dodgers accepted. It is so, so very wide open. And if in that potential matchup with the Dodgers, which, to win a World Series, the Brewers are probably going to need to beat the Dodgers. In that matchup, if you can go out there not only with Mizrowski, but with somebody else that can match up with Ohtani and Yamamoto and Snell and Justin Wroblewski, the way he's been pitching, and Tyler Glasnow, and all the arms that the Dodgers have, I think the Brewers learned last year, you need to go in as loaded as you possibly can. And if there's any year to do it, I think the year where Jacob Mizrowski is doing his best Bob Gibson impersonation, and a year where, so few teams seem to be legitimate contenders, that's the year to do it.
I have more questions, but I have to ask, because Tausch views himself as a purveyor of analogies and metaphors of the highest order. You have to be, game recognizes game.
That was a fantastic analogy.
That window one has to be in the Hall of, that was unbelievable.
Is there's another thing you can do with a windowsill, and that, of course, is put a steaming baked pie outside that windowsill. Like, that is something else you could do besides jumping out of the window, right?
Yeah, I'm not a hot fruit guy.
Really?
I'm a little ashamed of that, honestly, because I do have a pretty mature palate, and I've just there are certain things that I don't like, and hot fruit is one of them. It's really disappointing. Give me I'll take a key lime pie all day. I'll take a cheesecake, but bacon, apples, and cherries. Bleh.
So you're telling me if you're going through the Northeast and it's fall and it's a little chill in the air and there is a steaming hot blueberry pie off a windowsill, you're not going to pop over there and grab it?
No, I'm not a thief.
All right. Well, you'd pay for it. I mean, I'm not going
to. You think I'm going to pay for something that sucks? Come on.
Wow. God, your tips have been so good. And now you're anti-hot, beautiful pies. That's it. We all have our different likes, I guess.
We do. Well, no. We all have our flaws. And mine is that it must be a temperature thing because I don't like coffee or tea either. I'm just
so not even cold coffee. You don't go iced coffee or it's none of it.
How do you feel about hot takes?
Let's put it this way. I will drink coffee in one setting, and that's when I'm interviewing someone and they offer me coffee and I don't want to be rude.
Mm-hmm. Will you drink it or will you fake drink it?
No, I'll drink it. Okay. It will not be enjoyable, but I have to understand what my face does sometimes. For example, when I'm on television and I'm talking, I don't blink. It's really, really weird. Next time I'm on watch, and if you see me blink, that's me saying to myself, "Blink, mannequin." And
when did you notice that?
Or who noticed it for you?
No, I noticed it. I don't like watching myself on TV because of it. I don't like the look of my face. I talk out of the side of my mouth sometimes. The fact that they ever stuck me on TV remains a great miracle of this era, because I have no business being on television.
Continuing with, I don't like my face on TV and I don't like hot fruits. Jeff Passan on Wilde and Tausch. Tausch made a good point recently, which happens regularly. I want to be clear on that. He said, if I was a major league general manager, I just would never trade with Matt Arnold because I'm probably getting fleeced. Is that fair?
Yeah, it's like the Andrew Friedman corollary, and it's funny that Matt Arnold came from, among other places, the Tampa player development machine and the Tampa trade machine, because you succeed often enough and you show that you have capabilities that other organizations don't, and they will get a little bit of cold feet. They'll get a little bit wary about it. But I think at the end of the day, teams are going to trust in their evaluations. And while they may have that thing lingering in the back of their head that says, oh God, is this right? Do they know something that we don't know? They're going to trust their people and they're going to trust their process in the same way that the Brewers do. And the Brewers' process just happens to be better than everyone else's.
It does seem that way. And some of the, so we've discussed the, the prospects and how they've developed talent. And now they've signed a few of these guys. Churio, obviously, a few years ago, but Cooper Pratt. What does that tell you about how they're going to proceed? Because they still have a lot of other talented prospects, some that they have now signed for 7 or 8 years. Does that kind of give you any inkling as far as what they might do if there is one of these maybe out-of-the-box moves that the Brewers don't do? Or do you think it's just continue to develop the young talent, keep it? Or is it lean more towards they might make this big move before the trade deadline?
Well, I think until a move that satisfies what they're looking for now as well as going forward presents itself, they're just going to stay on the same path that they always have. Why wouldn't they? It has launched them to this place where even when going into a season, you're not sure what the Brewers are. They figure out a way to define themselves in a very similar fashion to past seasons. And this Brewers organization, the way that it operates, guys, the expectation has become excellent. That this what's happening this year, the way that the Brewers have played this season, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm guessing that people in Milwaukee generally appreciate it, but are no longer necessarily surprised
by
it.
That's a great assessment.
And what an incredible gift that is for any fan base to have such faith in your front office and in your manager and in the players that even if other teams are doing the splashy, sexy things in the off season, you know at the end, when it's all said and done, you're going to be as good, if not better than them. And that's what the Brewers have been for the Chicago Cubs, right? Can I ask, by the way, how people in Milwaukee felt about their home game turning into a road game?
I was confused how that I thought we had done everything we could to prevent that from happening.
Clearly not. That can't happen. That, like, simple as that, that cannot happen.
I'm guessing they're saying the same thing in their building. Jeff, if we are talking about Matt Arnold making a trade, obviously that game you're referring to also saw the bullpen challenges, maybe their need for another arm. Are there people not named Scooble that are potential smart additions that you could see the Brewers pursuing to shore up their bullpen?
Here's the thing about the Brewers and bullpens, right? I think it was last year that they got Nick Mears, I think it was last year that they got Nick Mears. The Brewers are not going to be the team where you see all of the name relievers or you see the guys that you know, and those are specifically their targets. Like, would Aroldis Chapman be great? Yeah, absolutely. But he's going to cost a lot, right? He's clearly, as long as Josh Hader's not moving, Aroldis Chapman is clearly the best relief pitcher with closing capabilities available on the market right now. Maybe because you've had Trevor McGill and because Joel Kunel showed that he can finish out a game, and because Abner Uribe is there, you don't feel like you need somebody with that closing ability, and you can go for a left-hander, you can go for a Brooks Raley, you can go for an AJ Minter. There are others, but to me, when I'm looking at the bullpen arms that the Brewers are going to go after, it tends to be guys with good stuff who they feel like they can throw into the lab and make great. And that's what Nick Mears was last year. It's not necessarily about the guys who have the sparkling sexy ERAs, it's the ones who the Brewers feel like they can make best. And I don't know who that guy is. You know, maybe it's a guy like Chris Bubich with Kansas City, who's been a starter and who's been stretched out but has been hurt this year and is working in short stints in the minor leagues right now. And as a reliever, you know, a couple of years ago when the Royals made their playoff run, Bubich was awesome. So I don't know, do I think that the Brewers at the end of the day are going to be in on Scooble? I don't know that they're going to be willing to pay the price that the Tigers are asking. But do I know that the Brewers are going to be in on a relief pitcher who makes you say, huh, okay, yeah, that's what they do. That's where they operate. That's where they're most comfortable.
So you think more of a reliever? There's also been talk, and I know Cooper Pratt was brought up, but left side of the infield bat. Is there a bat that you think the Brewers might be interested in, and do you think that they need to go down that road?
I mean, I could see Isak Paredes, but Isak Paredes is on an Astros team that has been playing well lately that is not inclined to sell unless it has to, and there's also the fact that Jesus Mate is pretty close to the big leagues at this point. And you have a second baseman in Bryce Terang. I don't think he's going anywhere. You have a shortstop in Cooper Pratt. He is signed up and not going anywhere. So You know, with a guy like Paredes, if you feel like Mate is not going to be ready until the 2028 season, then yeah, then I get not going after, or I get going after Paredes. But this is one of those tough ones where developmentally they almost feel like they're at an in-between place right now, just when a guy arrives versus when they need him. And it would be nice if Mate were ready at this point, but the Brewers have shown they're willing to bake prospects for a little bit longer than most organizations. You sign Luis Lara to a contract, he's on your big league roster. Like in almost every organization, that's how it goes. But the Brewers, I think they're looking at this in a very sound way. We're going to try and lock in deals with guys, whether it's Churio or Pratt or Luis Lara, that we feel like long-term are going to be real wins for us. And we're going to give the guys the opportunity that they need to get as seasoned as they do before they do this thing, get to the big leagues. That's really difficult.
Is there any Jeff Passan proclamations before we let you go that you can predict? Because it sounds like you skipped 2027. That wasn't because you don't think there's going to be a baseball season, did you?
No, but I think if you're the Brewers and you're looking at the labor situation right now, you have less room for error than other teams do until you know that the system has changed completely. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but Paredes, the thing with him is he's under contract for the next two seasons. And so if you are going to trade for a guy like that, you would do so assuming that you're going to have him for both seasons.
All right, Jeff, we've kept you a long time, but as someone who has drank coffee that he didn't want to drink because it was being offered by Dick Bennett, and how can I say no to the legendary Badgers coach, and as somebody who loves a story, you say I should just forget about a Josh Hader reunion because that trade really bottomed out that team. Even if it was the right trade at the time, if you remember the impact it had on that team, there is not a reunion happening there, right?
I don't discount it entirely. It sure would be a good addition, though, right? I think it's less likely on the Astros' end than the Brewers' end. And beyond that, a Brewers roster and a Brewers payroll like this right now, $19 million for a reliever is a hefty sum. But, man, you put Josh Hader at the back end of that bullpen, how much better do you feel? How much better does it look? It's a question of what it's going to cost. Would you guys give up Andrew Fisher for Josh Hader?
I would not. I saw him at the Timber Rattlers game a month ago. He was really good, so I would not.
Yeah. Would you give up Josh Adamczewski for Josh Hader?
I don't know who Adamczewski is.
Okay. Josh Adamczewski would
for
have been
Bubich,
my,
I might.
I wish I came on.
Tausch wants Bubich.
No, I'm on board with the Bubich.
You know, Adamczewski, I saw him take a swing in spring training a couple years ago and hit a home run when he was like 19 years old. And I was like, man, that is a pretty swing. And so I've been following him ever since. And he's probably a top five prospect for the Brewers now. Like, he's really, really good. So they keep doing it, man. I give them so much credit, not just for identifying talent, but for being able to then execute and develop it. It's the hardest thing to do in baseball, and the Brewers are where they are now because they're better than anyone at doing it.
All right, two rules we have now officially adopted. One, don't trade with Matt Arnold. Two, if Jeff Passan mentions a Brewers prospect by name,
don't trade him.
And Tausch and I don't know who he is, we better do some research so we're ready for him to be a really good player when he eventually gets to the bigs. Jeff, we love you, man. We appreciate you so much. Sorry to keep you so long. And thanks for coming to our funeral.
Boys, it was nice knowing you.
They had such a good show. I'm going to miss them.
Not a funeral.
That is Jeff Passan.